Welcome to the A News Podcast. This is episode 85 for October 12th, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the non-sectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorial, Anarchist Principles, Redux, by Aragorn. For a number of years, I've been thinking that the old school anarchist principles need updating. In the old days, a lot of anarchist questions were answered by using the litmus of solidarity, mutual aid, direct action, and voluntary association. Anarchists may have squabbled, but ultimately solidarity informed their behavior to one another. When a task was larger than one person or group could accomplish, mutual aid was the frame for coordination. And direct action was how most anarchist activity was described, where desire and coordination met. Finally, association with each other was, and is, voluntary. We are not compelled to associate with each other. But today, most of these principles are shadows of what they were. The idea of anarchist solidarity outside of a demonstration or publication is nice, but rare. Most anarchists are barely surviving in an economy on fire, and have been mostly flung to the periphery of the periphery, or to full-time jobs, with little time for coordination against the empire. Voluntary association is more often than not about its dialectical twin, exclusion. While exclusion is certainly an important part of defending oneself and one's community, it has seemed to have become a perversion of self-defense. Perhaps this is a generational thing, but exclusion seems to be the go-to tool in many situations where one used to argue for one's positions, feel frustrated, not heard, and, through a process of improving one's argumentation, thinking, and changing one's mind, would come to a new plateau of positions, feelings, and relationships. What happens now, and largely this is due to exclusion, is that anarchist circles no longer talk to each other, and, at their worst, no longer talk to each other. I.e., this is an issue of inter-circles and intra-circles. The result is isolation, a shrinking of the circles and the meta-circles, and a terrible future for anarchist projectuality in the medium to long term. We have eaten our young, we have largely eaten each other, and now we range the desolation of social media and the left, looking for more protein. I have imagined that a new set of anarchist principles would follow from the free software model, from contemporary anarchist thinking, and other sources, but it's hard to see that happening in the condition of isolation and exclusion we find ourselves in. While transparency is a modern principle that makes sense in a certain way for anarchist projects, it is bedeviled by the urge for our projects, protests, and publications to be anonymous and untraceable. While we may desire meetings that are less bureaucratic and differently participatory, we have seen that those with the most experience and enthusiasm tend to take their energy elsewhere. Of course, the argument against principles takes us in yet another splintered direction. In the anarchist hyper-youth culture, which looks more and more embarrassing as we gray, our disdain for our parents prevents us from admitting we had them in the first place. We have all sprung from Zeus's head. We have been taught nothing by nobody. We are the first people doing everything for the very first time. We refuse such a beast as anarchist principles because, of course, they are just trying to tie us down to stupid shit, to rules, to their order, which we reject. After this rant, I guess the best I can conclude with is the potential of articulating what my anarchist principles are, the ones that drive my work, my projects, and my relationships with others. I desire freedom and think that timing, attack, and my voluntary associations are necessary to achieve it. Before I am free, I think the preconditions of freedom are worth methodically going through. I do this by way of publications, but I realize there may be better ways that require a different social organization than the one I have access to. But in this space of creating preconditions, I attempt to be transparent, poetic, and open with who I work with and how we do it. I strive for an environment that is both and rather than either or. Indifference, exclusion, and isolation are forms of hate. Attack is a form of love. Thank you to Aragorn for that editorial. What's new this week? Trial update on Yogyakarta prisoners from Anarchist BC, our correspondent in Indonesia. This is an update on the legal situations for the 11 people imprisoned for protesting in Yogyakarta. All of them now have legal assistance, so that's something. Other than that, the information is sparse, but the wishes are warm. Good luck to them.
Vetriolo, Anarchist Paper 2818, from Contra.info. Quote, It seems that today, those who content themselves with assimilating facts and notions that are easily memorized and shared are many. So many objective, immediate things, nothing too complicated, and very little to reflect upon. They are those who praise real and proper ignorance and reject theory as something out of place, boring, of secondary importance, something authoritarian even. In fact, not by chance, you can happen to be told that you want to rip off and deceive someone merely by exposing and expressing your ideas. Revolutionary ignorance? Certainly not. This kind of misery is typical of those who can't perceive the complementarity between thought and action, unquote. This is only in hard copy, apparently, so no idea what the writing is like, but the table of contents is elastic like a sling, 2007 to 2017, 10 years of revolts and refluxes, parallel convergences, a contribution by Marco from the prison in Alessandria, from the popular front to the civil front, 24-hour monoculture, the whole truth, considerations on the cages of democracy, the unbearable dullness of being scientific, dreams of captivity and captivity of dreams, infinite eyes, rapist and boss, against state anarchism, the birth of the state, what international? Interview and dialogue with Alfredo Caspito from the prison of Ferrara, part one, the new monsters, social but not class anarchism, a leftist story, part two, 1943 to 1962, the fun has ended, unfortunately. It seems that despite this English language announcement, the paper is in Italian. Where's that Italian dictionary?
Attack on the headquarters of Bayer AG from Act for Freedom Now. Quote, so late into the night of September 24th to 25th, we mustered our courage and beat our hammers many times on the pearly facade of Bayer AG headquarters in the 9th District of Lyon. To get their poisons get out of our plates, their diseases out of the earth and our bodies, and because a minister's resignation and climate marches will change nothing, we are calling for the echo of this modest attack to continue to resonate on their showcases and in our hearts, unquote. This brief communique starts out with the terribly poignant and accurate following line, quote, in this troubled world where the border between friendship and enmity is increasingly uncertain and changing, the mercantile society is still generous enough to produce some really bad villains, unquote. Can I get an amen?
Sorry to bother you, comrade, a primal anarchist at the theaters, from Anarchist Agency. Some will find this review by Kevin Tucker of the Boots Riley movie to be mildly entertaining. Some might find the politics bland and or infuriating, but I find myself struck by the growth of the shade of the Channel Zero, Agency, Crime Thing, IGD umbrella. Anarchist Megacorp, anyone?
Barred from Banksy's Art World, from freedomnews.org.uk. This is a cranky piece about Banksy's Not All That, which isn't something worth even mentioning in my world, so apparently other people are more excited slash hung up on Banksy. This piece complains that, quote, art is a fucking joke where class divisions are glaring. When we have something of cultural value that they want, they appropriate it whilst barring us from any involvement other than gawping at the spectacle, unquote. Why is this author acting like Banksy is anything more or different from any other worker, although more clever and funny than many? Art that is part of the marketplace is business. Let's move on now.
Pontianak City, Indonesia. Poster bombing and vandalism actions against the International Monetary Fund. World Bank Group meeting in Bali, from Anarchist BC, a communique. Quote, these spontaneous actions we carried out express our uncompromising rejection of a normal life full of daily submission. These actions are a manifestation of our hatred, anxiety, and anger against a system that requires us to accept a society where we have no control over our own lives. Their meeting is a clear sign that global capitalism has improved its position in controlling daily life with various disgusting economic schemes and investments. And another thing you should know, you are all under their control. You just don't realize that the concept of good slash bad morality that you follow is what allows them to achieve their goals. You are all their obedient tools, unquote. There's a link that is supposed to be more photos, but instead is an email address. I appreciate that this communique brings it home. Feel the B-U-R-N, folks.
Audio, Anarchy Radio, an hour. Kathin and Jay-Z discuss the many failures of Chris Hedges and pacifists and liberals in general. Other than that, nothing unusual.
B&G Podcast 15, B-A-G-R Roundtable Discussion, an hour. This is a chat between about six people, although one of them is silent. and it starts out with them talking about what's wrong with anarchists for not being primal. It's a challenge for any group to discuss why they're not more popular, and this group doesn't avoid the standard rationale that other people just don't understand, or are too weak and or postmodernist slash nihilist slash defeatist. KT discusses the shift from anarcho-primitivism to primal anarchy. KT talks about how much flack they get in their genre of anarchism, to which I can only say, you've merely adopted the dark. Like with the podcasts of the William Gillis Friendship Circle, one person seems to talk as much as the rest combined, although I didn't actually time it. Maybe next time. KT apologizes in a non-apologizing kind of way for using technology in pursuit of his dream. Also, KT, I doubt you're listening, but I think you meant palpable, not palatable. Just saying. KT tries haranguing to press people into not giving up. There are some more thoughtful voices, including Cliffs, who's a common guest on Anarchy Radio. Jay-Z continues to be a voice for nihilism, all unwitting, apparently. Perhaps it will turn out that he has been trolling us all along.
Bad News, Episode 15, September 2018. 53 minutes. Segments about the International Week of Solidarity with Anarchist Prisoners, and in the U.S., the National Prison Strike, and environmental issues, including Hombach Forest. For those who haven't been keeping up, Hombach Forest is ancient, with centuries-old trees, and the plan is for it to be demolished for a coal strip mine. Obviously, thousands have been protesting this.
Teen Vogue to Black Metal, waving the black flag with Kim Kelly. An hour. Kim is an engaging, articulate, personable speaker, so she brings some freshness to this interview/conversation. It starts right out with the anarchy, which is refreshing after listening to a lot of other podcasts, even if the touch points are not more controversial than Goldman and Berkman. She gives advice for wannabe professional writers and an inside perspective on mainstream media. It's both worse than and not as bad as what people are told. And talks about being in the middle between journalists and activists. In the no duh category, both host and guest are firmly on the no platform platform.
Black Rose interview with the Movement of Color podcast, 40 minutes. This is an interview of Black Rose members by the Movement of Color host. The interview starts halfway through the episode at 18 minutes and 30 seconds, and it's introduced by the host saying that the two Black Rose members are there to talk to the host about what he's done wrong, specifically lumping Black Rose into platformism in a previous episode on anarchism. Can you spell LOL? The Black Rose rejoinder is that they're just humble organizationalists in the Specifismo tradition, although, quote, there are some similarities, unquote. The argument for a national organization is to A, ease communication from one area to another, and B, to support people when they move from one place to another. The host asks the question, what is it like to be a person of color in leftist space? The person from LA talks about feeling stuck in between after organizing the LA Anarchist Book Fair in 2018, when the tablers, who were mostly white, got into trouble from folks of color in the neighborhood.
Topic of the week: mainstream culture and politics. This week, we're taking a look at mainstream culture and politics. How are things looking from your point of view? What is your relationship like to mainstream culture and politics in and outside of anarchism? Is it by choice or because of other obligations, like work, family, and friends? Should anarchists be more and less involved in these more mainstream cultural and political activities? What does participating versus spectating versus keeping track of look like? How is your anarchist practice defined by mainstream, the news cycle, the topics of the day, popular culture? Is your affinity group organizing around mainstream issues? Is it selling out? Just surviving? Getting to know the enemy? Or simply becoming what you hate? And on the other end, are you distancing yourself from mainstream society and its day-to-day grind? What does that look like, and how has it been? What can anarchists learn from this?
Yeah, I've been thinking, I have been getting pretty fried on news, which I made a absolute effort not to pay any attention to news for a long time and only paid attention, only got my news from friends when they said, thought something was important. They would let me know. And anarchist news sometimes just because I keep tabs on it. And since Trump got into office, I have shifted to paying a ridiculous amount of attention to news. And then was like, oh God, finally, I was like, this is insane. This is stupid. This is the same people saying the same shit in the same silos over and over again. Why am I listening to it? And then I got sucked back in with the Kavanaugh shit, honestly. Mm-hmm. Because I feel implicated in abortion stuff more than any other reason. But it is, for a long time when I wasn't listening to, we don't need to just talk about news. That's definitely not the only thing going on. Mainstream culture is, of course, bigger than that. But what's up for me in my life is the phenomenal amount of disasters, but also how media sells itself on disasters. So on a certain level, it's hard. Like, I've never trusted the mainstream media. I've always sort of had a sense that, yes, they're just here. We are just moneymakers for them. Like, that's the bottom line. And then at some point, I guess I forgot that or something. But it's viscerally in my life again about how the way that the left and mainstream media feed off of each other and not just the left, any movement, really. I mean, obviously the alt-right, too. Like, everybody's using each other as a way to build urgency in order to get people to do things. I definitely got burned on leftism doing that a long time ago. But just sort of so I guess I'm just relearning these lessons from different directions and also being reminded that, the world seems like it's an incredibly depressing, horrifying place right now. With, news of populism growing all around the world, and Trump is bad enough. Like, the idea that there's multiple Trumps is just like, what the fuck? But that I can't, there's all the different layers. So, like, I can't do that much about that. And at the same time, it's probably not exactly what's going on. And yeah, so anyway, my rant.
It's funny doing the topic of the week with you. Ariel tends to be very responsive. You are quite unfocused. And all over the place.
Yeah.
So I find that amusing.
Yes. We are different people.
I always come in with a plan.
Yes, that we are also different people.
So about 10 years ago, I remember that I wanted to have real conversations with regular people.
Mm.
And so I spent an entire year watching this show called Inside the NFL.
Oh, Jesus.
Which basically gives you enough information to be able to talk about football.
Your football team. You're a man. I believe exactly. There's some man shit going on here.
Exactly. So I could be like, yes, he had a...
I could be like, bro. That's what you are. That's what you're doing right now.
Well, that's a general way to talk about it. But what was great about watching this show is I could actually use real information to have a conversation rather than just my impressions or caricatures.
I get by with impressions and caricatures just fine, thank you.
But the urgency, which is similar to an activist urgency, is like, have I forgotten how to talk to regular people?
Sure, sure, sure.
Because the truth is that, this question about mainstream culture and politics, this is a question I asked myself when I was like 19 years old.
Sure.
And I knew that the entirety of my social circle was countercultural. And then when I left college, I basically started cutting out the people in my life who were not countercultural.
Yep.
So in my early 20s, I went through a discreet effort to cut those people out of my life. But did it mean that if I was in a subway that I couldn't have a conversation with the person sitting next to me? Absolutely not.
And
that's actually like part of my concern about the thinking behind this topic of the week, mm-hmm. is that idea, like while it is totally funny that I spent a year talking football, I didn't need it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Because in general, those conversations, like, unless you're going to have it on a like super fan level, those conversations don't require you to do anything but nod, mm-hmm. and agree with the general impression of the conversation. And the same is true of talking about mainstream news, which is why, mm-hmm. I actually really enjoyed the fact, and this has also been true in the last 10 years, since Jon Stewart and The Daily Show,
uh-huh.
have been lampooning news and have basically been creating abbreviated news programs, I've absolutely turned a page. Like as much as I find it interesting to watch sort of like the PBS level news program, it's not qualitatively that much better than
a
corporate news.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't chase the Twitter level stuff as much. And like sometimes those commentator type people, the old white men that they have on the program, have an in-depth understanding that I want to hear.
Sometimes, yeah.
Right, but mostly I don't care about this. Yeah. Like, this is a reality that I turned away from 30 years ago.
Yeah, I'm gonna. One of the things that I was just listening to, where I guess I've been listening to a bunch of podcasts, and one of the things that's come up a couple of times is people's desire or the idea that anarchists, and really when they say anarchists, what they mean is political people, are harder to talk to than normal people. And I think this was in a comment on Ainu's, actually, that political people have camps, and so you can't actually talk to them.
Right.
And that's sort of the same way that you're talking about NFL, or it's like if people have made a decision about a topic or about a range of topics, then that's what you're going to get, is that canned response that sort of that you're a member of a group, and so therefore you have a take on this. And it's sort of like, whereas if people haven't thought about it or don't belong to a camp, or their camp doesn't have a position on this particular thing or whatever, then you can actually maybe have a real conversation where you're actually exchanging views that you both have and honestly interacting with each other. And it makes me think about organizations and how, like, this used to be a thing about that I thought about organizations where you couldn't, you had to have a position and it was the organization's position. And it's been, and that's been spread, out, so that you no longer have to be a part of an actual organization. You can just it's now more broad and arguably shallower than, but only arguably.
Well, definitely ideology is a turnoff for a lot of people, a lot more people than we used to sort of think. But at the same time, obviously, the ideology has become more of a substrate. Like, I actually really enjoyed, this was probably a liberal commentator, but a liberal commentator sort of went through Trump's arguments about what he's accomplished up till now in his administration, and talked about why all of those things are sort of why he's going to get reelected and why his base is so on board. Mm-hmm. And hearing that sort of like twist of like, this is why what he's articulating, especially like what he's done in the executive branch and how much he's cut from the executive branch, is actually a really like hearing that argumentation played out is like, oh, of course.
Right, right.
Like it really gave the people who sort of like make really stupid comments and don't give a fuck about a whole bunch of things that quote unquote Democrats do, it really put that into a really interesting highlight. And while, like, of course, like my sympathies on some level are with the Democrats, even though, of course, I've been an anarchist for a long time and all the rest. But, I still grew up in a union home. I grew up in a, traditionally blue state that's sort of now in contestation because it's Michigan.
Yeah.
There's still that. So it's like I still watch the horse race and sort of like am for a team. But then when I listen to Democrats talk about
heinous.
Their argumentation,
they're fucking horrible.
It's terrible. Like
they're really bad.
It's never really based on like a first principle or anything discernible other than like a manipulation. And, recently I've been watching the John Oliver show, and any time he actually explains his thinking, it's just terrible. It's just terrible. Even if I agree with
the premise or something.
It is sort of terrible. But
so
let's talk about culture here for a second. Obviously we've mostly been talking about politics. I'm a huge consumer of mainstream culture. Mm-hmm. I watch I'm not sure if I watch the top three programs that are out, but I keep up with probably the top 10 most watched mainstream cultural programs. And I think, and so in that way, I'm absolutely not countercultural in all of my consumption in a way that maybe I was in my 20s. So I absolutely keep up with television. I keep up with, Netflix and I'm a deep cultural consumer.
You do that. That's very true. It's like when I think about how do you be really culturally engaged in an alt way these days? Because there isn't like punk was a Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have talked about this before, that there's no subculture anymore.
Sure.
And this is maybe what you were talking about, and it doesn't actually parse for me the way that you talk about it or something, but that thing about how there's not, like, there's niches, but there's not sort of an anti going on. There's just hegemony. There's just hugeness and all of its, you know, and it just gets you from all these different directions, but there's nothing... There's nothing underneath about it. There's no sub.
No.
There's no fight. There's no fight.
It's so.
I mean, or the fight is in different realms or something.
Cultural production is such a financially intensive operation that basically the best way to tell stories today, you know, as everyone is sort of participating in, is television. And to be able to produce a counter television. It just doesn't, it's impossible. The best way to do it is to basically do television in a smaller format and fuck with it in some way. But even examples of that, like the American Gods show, right? American Gods was it came out of counterculture, right? Neil Gaiman was involved in the 1980s in the subcurrent of graphic novels that we would definitely call countercultural. In the 80s, but by the end of the 90s, it had become more or less like a minor mainstream sort of phenomenon. And American Gods came out of that sort of zone.
Yeah.
And it's a dirty show. It's messy. It's it's all over the place, but it's still absolutely a financially intensive television
program.
Well,
I mean, there's an argument that this is what podcasts are trying to do. You know, this is why podcasts are exploding, is because it's one of those half steps where people can do storytelling or can do presentation of things that doesn't require the kind of dedication and following that reading actually is turning into in a certain way.
I'll just say I've tried to consume some of the best of the podcast storytelling things. I've had a very hard time enjoying them. Into the Night Vale and some of the others.
But I'm not just talking about fiction thing. I mean, I guess I'm not totally clear on what I'm saying, but there's something about as a media presentation, it's a half step where it's like it's something different than either the high tech, you know, even indie movies, it seems like, I'm just thinking that people who are involved in indie media stuff, there is indie media stuff happening, and they would be very frustrated probably to hear me say that there's nothing anti going on, but it's not. But you do have to, it's such a niche thing, it's so small.
Well, I think in the anarchist space, just to say it, I was told explicitly that we, as an anarchist news, is not counter information. It's not a counter information site, unlike 325, Contra Info. Mm-hmm. Because we don't do original reporting, and essentially we link other people's content. But it was such a strange argument. It was their point was basically, because of our comments, we're not counter information. I guess to return to the
topic,
to the topic, what's your relationship to mainstream culture and politics in and outside of anarchism? I have a relationship to
Culture. I'm not sure. Yeah, it seems weird. Like, we are not, I am not MLM or whatever that MIM. Like, I'm not watching mainstream culture, popular culture stuff as a way to validate my own politics. Like, I am actually, when I am engaging in mainstream culture, movies, television shows, etc., I am enjoying it for what it is, and I will not like it because it's stupid according to what I think is real or whatever, But that idea that everything that we do has to sort of be filtered through this political sieve, that seems like a very strange way to live, I guess. And that's partly what comes up for me with this question.
Thank you very much.
Oh.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel. What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel and Dim. The editorial was written by Aragorn. We thank Aragorn for their help with the topic of the week. To learn more Anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and material are available at littleblackheart.com. And for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org.